Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson, and this is episode 241. And my guest today, asking about a dream, is Mouse. Mouse lives in Washington State in the US, right up near the border with Canada by the Salish Sea. Sounds quite idyllic, as you'll hear her describe it when we chat. Now, if you haven't listened to The Dream Show before, what you need to know is that when we have a guest on the show, we arrange everything, and the only thing that I don't know is what dream the guest is going to bring. So as we hit the record button, you hear the dream at the same time as I hear the dream, and so you are there with the guest and I from the very beginning, going through that whole exploration, finding out what the dream means, how it relates to the person's life, and what deeper insight they can get from that dream exploration to make decisions and know themselves more deeply. And you'll hear all of that today. We've just finished recording. I'm here putting the beginning of the show on, so I know you're going to enjoy this one. But just before we go there, a reminder of the website addresses. My main website is janeteresa.com. That's Teresa without an H. That's where you can go to listen to every episode of The Dream Show that's ever been. And of course, you can always listen to the last 10 or so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, basically any of the main podcast platforms and some of the smaller ones as well. JaneTeresa.com is also where you go to read loads and loads of blogs on dream and dreaming, to subscribe to my newsletter to find out more. And it's also where you go to find out how to consult me so that you can ask me privately about your dream, either on Zoom, by phone, or by email. And it's also where you go to link through to my other website, which is where you can do online courses to learn to interpret your own dreams, to learn how to do dream alchemy, or even to gain professional certificates in dream therapy. And that separate website, the Dream Academy, is found at dream-academy-online.com. But right now, let's get on with Mouse's dream. Welcome to the Dream Show, Mouse.
Thank you, Jane.
I understand you are in Washington State. Where exactly are you?
Yeah, so I am in the northernmost corner of the U.S., very, very close to Canada, in the foothills of the Cascade Mountain Range, and also nestled next to the Salish Sea, an unceded indigenous Coast Salish territory.
Oh, that sounds absolutely fabulous. And lots of variety in the environment around you. You're close to the sea, you're close to the mountains.
Yes, yeah. It's just that I'm looking out the window and there are blue mountains and green trees, and it's very wet. It's raining. It hasn't stopped raining for months, actually, and there's a lot more to come.
Oh, what a perfect kind of time to be in your cocoon and talking about dreams.
Without a doubt, the dreams have certainly kept me warm company through the dark, long days of the year.
That's great. Okay, so I have no idea what dream you've picked. I have no idea at all. So over to you now, your dream.
Okay, thank you. So this dream I had on the evening of Sunday, January 24th, so not that many days ago, about a week ago, I suppose. Okay, so I was outside in the evening time around dusk in a cul-de-sac of a suburban neighborhood, and I was being attacked by an unfamiliar man. I was near a house that was familiar, and the man was out in the street at a distance of 50 to 100 feet from me, and he was throwing daggers at me. And there were other people outside, but he was only throwing at me, and his aim was not perfect, and I was agile enough to be able to move my body to not be struck. And I remember the daggers were quite beautiful, maybe with a bronze blade and a striped red and black handle, and they were a bit tarnished and quite felt quite old. and he was running out of daggers and getting closer. And I'm not sure why I didn't immediately start running away as opposed to sort of standing there and dodging as he continued to throw daggers at me. And there was a young man who was a friend of mine who was collecting the man's daggers and then attempting to give them back to him, and I was very confused by that. Finally, I ran into the house, and there were many people inside, all of whom were familiar and sort of knew what was going on, that I needed to hide from this man. I was in a living room, or like a parlor, and there were many couches and people sitting on them. I chose one to hide my body behind, laying on the ground with my back against the wall and the sofa squished up against me. But I still felt very exposed. My head and arm were pretty much in plain view, so I was there for a while, but then I decided I needed to keep moving instead of wait like a sitting duck. The man did come inside and look around, but all of the people were redirecting him elsewhere, and he eventually left, but I started to make plans to really, really get out of Dodge in the big way. So some people helped me and came with me as I ran out the back of the house. And then there's sort of like a scene change. And I'm in the parking lot at night and am in a hurry to go. I'm quote unquote running away for my life. It feels a little bit like a hotel. And I had collected some stuff, a sleeping bag, a tent, some clothes, other things, and it felt like it was too much, more than I could carry, so I needed a vehicle. And in the parking lot there was an abandoned old white work van that was actually in real life belonged to an ex-partner of mine. It was kind of creepy, a creepy old white van with no windows. And I opened the door and got in the driver's seat and put all my stuff inside. And there was a person inside that was sleeping in the back seat, but it didn't matter. I just kept going. And I think I knew that it was abandoned and it didn't really belong to anybody and nobody would miss it, but there was also a sense of stealing it. And I also knew that the taillights didn't work, so I was weary to drive it at night, but we had no choice. So I took off and started driving, and there were sirens going, but I couldn't see them in my rear view. I was looking for a less busy road to turn down. I didn't know where I was going. I was just driving. I turned on a road and started driving down. It was very, very, very steep, and it turned from the city into a sort of kind of wilder area, and the road was large round river rock, and there were plants kind of growing very close to the road and very tall trees immediately off of the urban road where I had just been. So I was driving down this very, very steep road, and I got to the bottom, and I didn't like where I was, so I turned around and drove back up. And I didn't think that I would make it because it was so deep, but the van handled fine. And then at the fork where I had turned previously, I turned in the other direction, which was also a very steep, rocky road, and there were actually railroad tracks at the bottom of it. And I turned and started going down it, but I realized that I probably wouldn't want to find myself there at the bottom of the hill, so I stopped halfway down the hill and backed up and made it back to the urban street. And so I was out on the street again and eventually drove to a place where I felt safe enough to sleep for the night. And it felt like an industrial neighborhood on the wild edge of nature or the forest. And I was with somebody, so at first I was me, Mouse, this identity that I know, and this person who I had found sleeping in the van who I didn't know. And then it changed, and so I became a young man, and I was with a young woman who was much smaller than myself, and we were getting away together. And we were friends, but romantically inclined, and we decided we were going to sleep on the top of the van under the stars. And we were cuddling, and I began to move and touch her in a more sexual way, and she became very scared and disappeared, vanished in my arms. And I cared deeply for her and was trying to be so gentle and loving. I was confused. I looked all around the van and then found her inside in the front passenger seat, sobbing. And that's all I remember from that dream.
Wow, that's a fantastic, lovely, long, meaty dream you've got there. And I even managed to write most of it down. and it's lovely to work. People listening in might be a little bit confused because you said I had this dream on Sunday, January the 24th, a week ago, and this episode's actually going out in towards the end of March. So, yes, we're recording early. And it's great to look at a dream which is fresh on your mind too. So, I particularly love the swap at the end where you become the sleeping man in the back of the car. And
I'm not sure if that's what happened. It felt like we were two people, and I was me and he was him, and then the both of us changed into different people.
All right. Okay. Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. And so if we actually look at that sleeping man more towards the beginning of the dream, when you first noticed there was a sleeping man in the car, in the van, is that someone that you knew from waking life, or was that totally a dream character?
I'm fairly certain that that was just a dream character.
Mm. But it's associated with the abandoned old white van, which was a van that belonged to an ex-partner some time ago.
Yes, the van, I knew every detail of it because it was something that I knew in my waking life.
Right, okay. So as usual, when we approach a dream, or when I approach a dream on the Dream Show, we kind of don't always necessarily start at the beginning. We sometimes start, you know, towards the end or the middle, or just a bit that kind of jumps out to me. But eventually we go back to the beginning. And I really wanted to begin, even though that symbol, the abandoned white car, seems quite mundane compared with a lot of the other kind of magical symbolism and excitement in the dream. I just feel it's a strong starting point here, because it's going back to, it's a reference to an old relationship. You know, the actual white van from your actual ex-relationship appearing in the dream suggests that even though the dream, any dream, is processing the last 1 to 2 days of all your conscious and unconscious experiences, during that processing, anything that comes up which resonates with something from the past, then that past thing will come up. So there's a sense of whatever it is that you're processing in the stream mouse does bring in something from that old relationship, and particularly around probably the sense of abandonment, whether you abandoned him or he abandoned you, I don't know, but you saw the car in the van in the dream came up as an abandoned car with a sleeping person in it. So it's like, there's a sense of abandonment from this ex-relationship and some part of myself that may be asleep too, hasn't quite yet awakened to what all that was about, is relevant to what was happening to you or for you in the date 1 or 2 days before the dream.
Absolutely.
So, although as we go, you'll fill in details if you wish. That's why I was then so excited at the end of the dream that there was even though it wasn't the actual guy awakening, there was a sense of there were two of you awake at the end of the dream, associated with the car and with moving forward, as opposed to one of you being asleep and one of you being confused as to which direction you were going in.
Huh. Okay.
So, you know, if we look at everyone in the dream as reflecting something about the dreamer, which is the route that I take, then we can say that there's a part of yourself, and it was represented as male in the dream. So we're looking at the young side of yourself. We're looking at the inner male. We're looking at the how you relate to the outer world. That part of yourself, there was a part of yourself that was still asleep and hadn't yet awakened from what was happening in that ex-relationship, perhaps around abandonment, perhaps around, it might not have even been about abandonment within the relationship itself. It may have been about something that you abandoned in your work life, you know, because it was the sleeping male. So it may have been something that you have not yet awoken to or about to awaken to at the time of this dream, in relation to your yang side, your world out there, your working world, whatever it is. And in the dream, you do awaken to it because there's no sleeping person left. And when at the end of the dream, you switch roles and you're actually firmly in the male role. So there's a sense of actually my male side has not only awakened, but it is like it's the main character at this time in my life for the moment.
Wow. Yeah, I actually, abandonment is really at the top of my list of introspection topics these days.
Okay, that's good. I mean, it's not good that it happened, but it's good that it's there for introspection, because out of that, out of abandonment comes treasure and being found. So when you switch roles at the end, the female that you're with, but who you're very attracted to, and you reach out to make intimate contact with, actually, and you're caring, you're gentle, and you're loving, and she retracts from that and ends up crying. So, you know, if you're then looking at everyone in the dream being an aspect of yourself, once you do that role switch at the end, it's like you then are looking at a female part of yourself, your yin world. And because you see her as young, in fact, you're both young in the dream, it's almost like this is a nascent, newer version of your yin, of your female side, of your inner world, of your spirituality, your emotions, your creativity, all of these things, a newer version because she's young in the dream, that you're trying to reach out and touch, that you feel exactly as it says in the dream, that you care for, you want to reach out to this new aspect of yourself with gentleness and lovingly, and yet your dream is showing you that consciously or unconsciously she's retracting, she's not quite sure, she's not quite ready for this just yet. In fact, she's sobbing.
Yeah.
So we will be able to go, knowing that kind of outcome of the dream, be able to go back to the beginning of the dream and work through and find out what's behind all this and how we can bring that younger yin, if it's something that you'd like to bring on board, to become more intimate with her, to integrate her into your life so that you can go where you want to go.
Beautiful. I'm so very on board.
That's
so
great.
ready to do that.
We're on board, but in the car, we're ready to go. Okay, so we will explore that, actually, that ending and the abandonment and everything more deeply when we get there. But that's kind of puts the main context. So let's go to the beginning of the dream. The beginning of the dream often states the situation or the theme that the rest of the dream, whether it's a short dream or it's a long dream, that the rest of the dream goes on to explore. And so you've got, it's dusk and I'm in a cul-de-sac and I'm being attacked. So we could say right at the beginning, well, I should ask you, how do you feel about a cul-de-sac? What does a cul-de-sac mean to you? How do you feel about when you're in a cul-de-sac?
Quite uncomfortable. It doesn't feel like I feel a lot of things about a cul-de-sac. I do have fond memories of a best friend growing up living in a cul-de-sac. And I think I also suppose that there's sort of like an interest or a yearning to have a default kind of neighborhood built in, close at hand,
mm-hmm.
But also just part of an urban environment that I struggle with, asphalt and close proximity to people also.
Yes, yeah. So you've got all the dilemmas there. And of course, I guess, you know, the reason I asked you the question is some people see a cul-de-sac as a safe place because this, you know, you're at the bottom. People don't tend to come down a cul-de-sac road. And other people will see it as, oh, no, it's not going anywhere. It's a dead end. But you've described it beautifully with your own personal association, which is, on the one hand, there's this feeling of, yeah, I've got a yearning for a kind of default neighborhood community, but not in an urban neighborhood. So where do I find this community that works for me, because urban is not for me? So it's dusk at the beginning of your dream, which suggests that, you know, you can't see as clearly as you can when it's bright light. It's also the end of a day. So there's a sense of something that's coming to, maybe coming to an end, or you're not able to see as clearly as you would like to see, and it's around a sense of, I would like to be in some kind of community or neighborhood, and I do have some familiar and nice feelings about this because I had a best friend that lived in the cul-de-sac, but something's not quite right. I'm generally uncomfortable. I've got an aim that I'd like to be more community orientated, but I'm not there yet. I'm feeling uncomfortable. And so the rest of the dream goes on to explore this.
Okay.
And so the first dramatic...
Yeah, also I was going to say also this is very resonant in my life right now as I'm examining a place to move my home in just a couple of months.
Oh, that's perfect. That's good. So, yeah, perfect. So moving your home is not just about where you want your home to be, but where you want your heart to be and where you want your future to be and where you want everything, your work, your relationships to be. So it's a big thing. So the first thing that comes up is you get attacked very dramatically by a male. And so straight away we've got, okay, if we're looking at this dream because of what we discovered about the van and the integration / not integration at the end, we know that a lot of what's going on for you looks to be a bit of a conflict between your male side and your female side, your yin and your yang. And you know, in the context of what you've just said there, Mouse, you know, maybe trying to find somewhere to move to that works for both your yin and your yang. And there's, at the moment, it's a bit dissonant there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're attacked by this man, and any idea what kind of age he was or what he looked like, or did you get any other sense of him?
Yes. I would say a bit older than me. And I'm fair skinned, and the man I think was a bit darker skinned, olive, almost sort of Mediterranean. I'm Anglo-Saxon. But the face was not quite distinct. There was a distinction about his body, and his garments were fine. They had been tailored, and it wasn't quite costume, but dressed finely, absolutely, and sort of also matched the daggers that he was throwing at me that were very finely crafted, handcrafted, sort of raw and beautiful. Yeah.
So I want to come back to that, but just to be sure, but you still didn't, still having the daggers thrown at you wasn't a positive experience.
No, I mean... It was, I would think I was confused by the situation. I think there was some alarm, but it was mostly just confusion, and I didn't really feel like I was too much at risk. I knew that I had to maneuver, and that if I didn't maneuver, that things would be a lot worse than they would be if I did, but I was relatively easily able to maneuver out of the path of the dagger throwing. But I was sort of just I was there waiting as he would throw the next dagger, whereas yes. I could have turned and run, you know, immediately out of the way and into the house. It was sort of like a testing of my strength, and it was also sort of playful. Yeah, something like that. But he was also certainly out to get me. There was some sort of risk involved.
That makes sense. So even when you say like he was playful and testing your strength, there's that vision which a lot of people listening in might already have of the almost like the circus performer throwing the daggers at the woman that's fixed to the wheel, and the woman knows that she's utterly safe because she trusts him, but if there is still risk involved, there's that kind of scenario, particularly with the tailoring and the fine costume and the elegant skills that he's got, there's some aspect of maybe there. And I'm also thinking it's interesting that at the end of the dream, the female when you're the male and you reach out to the female, she's not so sure about being touched. So it's the male that's making the approach. And you could say in many ways at the beginning of the dream that this guy is making the approach, only he's doing it with daggers, not with fingers, because you've got that sense of, as you say, confusion rather than fear. Like, why am I not running? Why am I standing still? Why am I waiting? Something is reaching out to me here, but it's reaching out to me in a potentially risky and potentially threatening way. And yet I'm really impressed by the skill, the skillfulness here. There's something here that has me entranced, maybe even magical.
Yeah, definitely.
when you say he's darker skinned, you know, olive, maybe Mediterranean, that part of that may be in sync with the fact that the beginning of the dream is dusk. It's like a little bit unseen, not quite a shadow character in a dream, not really dark. You can see him a bit. In fact, you can see a lot of detail of his body. You just can't see the face. So the colouring might be reflective of that kind of darker side. But apart from that, what do you associate with people who are Mediterranean origin or olive skin? Does that have any particular personal association for you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've always felt a certain draw or enamorment or connection with sort of Mediterranean gypsy culture. And yeah, so a bit of the circus and the music and the sort of on the edge, rough and tumble, kind of behind the scenes or maybe rebellious qualities of that. I think there's a bit of shadow there by the sort of collective definitions that go along with it, but also a very deep, raw kind of intrigue in nature.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. So he's, as you defined him, he's part of your gypsy character or your circus character or your musical character, or the other words you used were on the edge, rough and tumble, rebellion, and I can't read the last thing that I wrote down. So that kind of aspect of yourself that at the time of the dream, it's like, yeah, there's this part of my gypsy side is reaching out to me here, and I'm really, really, really intrigued. And I'm not running from it, but I think I'm questioning maybe I should be running from this. You know, maybe this isn't what I should be doing, but there's something calling to me here. But is it, should I run? I'm at risk. I don't know. Ah, I'm confused. So, but the artisan nature of it all, you know, the beauty of the daggers, the detail that you noticed of on them, the bronze blades, the red and black handle, I think I've written down there. And yet they're tarnished, they're old. So, and also he was older. So there's a sense there of you feeling there's a part of yourself that wants to reach back, perhaps only to your own past, like no matter what age you are now, the past is old compared to where we are now. So it could be reaching back into something, a place that you've been before, which has been more gypsy-like, more on the edge. Or it could be a sense of, I, Mouse, have a feeling that I would like to draw on cultures, ancient, that lived more in this way, and I want to bring more of that skillful, those skillful gypsy, on the edge, rebellious details into my life. But I'm not sure how I feel about this. I'm just sort of, why am I standing here? Why aren't I running? What is it that intrigues me here?
Yeah.
And yet there is a part of you that obviously wants to run away, and that's the main part. So we don't know at the moment whether it's a good thing to bring this gypsy stuff into your life or whether it's not a good thing or whether you could bring some of it in or how to bring it in with balance. We're just looking at the processing of how you process this in your dream at the moment, so that you and I can then look in and say, well, what's the best solution here?
Okay.
Yeah. But you used the word dodging. You said in the end it felt like, although you were not running away, you were dodging. And when you got to the abandoned old white van thing, I think it was round about there or somewhere around about there, you mentioned, I've just got to get out of Dodge. So there's this whole thing of whether you realized it or not, you used the same word. Something that I'm dodging, something that I sort of not really running from, not really taking up. I'm kind of like, yeah, well, I just maybe dodge this way, dodge that way. Not really sure about this at all. And I just want to briefly come back to the guy as well, because you couldn't see his face. So there's something maybe in the thinking processes or the head end that you're not sure about. But there's so much definition in your recall of his body. It's almost like you have an embodied gypsy on the edge kind of side that you're very familiar with, and yes, you can do this dodging and you can do this maneuvering, so that there's like, it's almost like an innate ability, but your head's not quite sure what to do about it.
Totally. And the actually funny too is that the van that I actually escaped in, I'm pretty sure was a was it like a Chevy or a Dodge? I think it was a Dodge van.
So we have a triple Dodge theme going here. That's great. So even before we go any further, can you relate at the moment to this notion of dodging?
Absolutely I can. And too, now that I'm recalling the experience of the dodging out of the way of the daggers, it did feel like a dance. Like I remember sort of being enthralled by the experience of being very in my body, being embodied and with ease, sort of, and even stylistically, as if, you know, like there was sort of an audience, or I was even, you know, witnessing myself kind of dance, like just in physical prowess and dancing and dodging out of the way of these daggers.
Mm. So it's more a sense of, as you say, physical prowess rather than trying to evade something.
Well, I would say that there was a mix. It was like I mentally knew that this person, you know, I was their target, and that, you know, if I didn't engage in a certain way, I would be struck down or injured. But once I realized, you know, that I, in my body, I could engage with this in a sort of powerful way and did have the power to evade and move out of the way, that it became, you know, almost enjoyable, the experience, like, ha, like, You can't get me. Like, I can do this all day.
All right. So there's a feeling that if he did get you, and we'll just translate this to dream speak at the moment, if you'd fully integrated with that gypsy side of your character, there's a feeling that you had that would be injurious to you. That's not a good thing to do. Even though it has taught you and shown you that you have an amazing physical prowess, and that you could, as you say, I could do this all day. So there's almost a sense, you mentioned the word dance there, Mouse, there's almost a sense that you at the time of the dream were perhaps in this dance of being really engaged and interested and enthralled by what integrating with this gypsy side of yourself could do, and acknowledging the powers that it is, an embodiment that it has blessed your life with, but by the same token thinking, if I fully integrate in a way that I'm more gypsy than not gypsy, it's going to be injurious to me, it's not going to help.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not saying that is the way to go or not the way to go. I'm interpreting that's where you're up to in your dream processing at that stage.
Okay.
So just going to jump on a bit. I'm just try to read my writing here. So you do decide to run away at the end, in the middle of the next part, I mean, and that's where you meet the young boy. So the moment that you make the decision that, yeah, I'm going to actually run, you meet a young guy who was a friend in the dream or is a friend in waking life?
So the person that I saw in the back of the van when I got in, they were unfamiliar to me, I sensed that they were an older vagrant man with no home.
That was
so the it wasn't the same.
Yeah, that was a man that was sleeping in the car. Yeah, no, it was earlier than that.
Yes.
Just when you you were still having the daggers thrown at you and that you were thinking of running away. And then I'd written down that you, I've written down a young boy, a friend, before you ran to the house with
so
the people.
Yeah, so that, I forgot about that. So the man was throwing daggers at me and I was maneuvering and the man was running out of daggers. And so a friend of mine out on the street, out on the cul-de-sac with me, was collecting this man's daggers.
That's right.
And funneling them back to him. And I was confused about that because I was confused about that.
That's right. So was he, that character, was he totally a dream character or was he somebody that you know from waking life?
Dream character.
A dream character, okay. So there's a sense that there's another part of yourself that is feeding the system then. I want to run away, but there's another part of myself that's just feeding the daggers back again. Part of me is, I guess, that's going back to the enthralled again. Keep it happening, keep throwing these daggers. There's something keeping me here. I don't know whether to go or to stay. But then you do actually run to a house with people and you know that you want to hide from him. So you make a decision at that point in the dream. I do actually want to get out of Dodge, as you say. I want to get out of this almost amazing physical prowess, ability to feel this embodied gypsy stuff and to go with it. And yet it's keeping you stuck. It's not getting you anywhere. It's getting you maneuvering amazingly and skillfully on the spot, being a master of this maneuvering and this prowess, and yet it's not getting you from A to B, and you decide you want to get away from this gypsy character and hide. And that's when there are other people. Now, once again, everyone in a dream is an aspect of the self, so you could sense that it's drawing on more of Mouse to hide and escape this, but it may also be that just the number of people may be reflective of this idea of community, because if you go back to the beginning of the dream with the cul-de-sac, you were saying there's part of you that wants to be in a community or a neighborhood, just not the urban neighborhood. So there's a sense there of, I want to hide from this gypsy thing, but I do want to be in some kind of community. In the house, it was really difficult to hide. You tried. There were lots of places you could sit or lounge. in your culture, you said a living room or a parlor. Do you often refer to the living room as a parlor?
No, really, not at all. But it really did have the distinction between the living room and the parlor, maybe because the only thing that was happening in the room is that there were three sofas and they were sort of all old velour, kind of beautiful, soft wooden backing. They were sort of also old, like maybe 200 years old, but again, finely crafted and in good condition. And so it was just the three sofas and people sitting on them, communing with each other.
Yeah.
So that to me speaks of parlor, of just people sitting on sofas talking with each other.
It does, exactly. That's right. And of course, that's where the word comes from too, doesn't it? Because it's from parler, French, to speak. So, there's a sense there where I want to get away from the gypsy kind of feeling. I want to be in a space where I'm communing, I'm speaking, I'm in a community and communicating and talking. It's difficult to hide there, in fact, and it doesn't, you still feel like you're a sitting duck and you have to move again, but there's that essence of that's something you want to explore. And when you, again, it's got that artistic, great detail, embodied kind of thing in it. And when you say it's 200 years old, and I know we haven't got time to go into every aspect of the stream, so I'm going to just quickly go through this bit, but it's possible that 200 years old may refer back to when you were 20, because dreams, when they mention a number or you have a feeling about a number such that you want to talk, you want to say the number when you're discussing the dream, which you did, it can sometimes actually refer back to an age. So, and adding a zero for added interest, it may be that when you were 20, you may or may not have been in a situation where talking or not talking or communing or not communing was important to you.
Okay.
That's something for you to think about later. Then we get to the change of theme, and you're in the parking lot and you're saying, hurry, I'm running away from my life. I'm running away from my life, I think you said. So have a little think about...
running away for my life.
For my life, that's it, for my life. So have a little think about, is that something that you often say, I'm running for my life? Or is this, as the actual wording of the dream is, I'm not actually running away from something, I am going towards something for my life. For me to have life, for me to have vitality, there is somewhere that I need to be, somewhere I need to go. It's not running away to dodge, to get out of trouble. It's because I actually need to go somewhere for my life. I want to choose somewhere for my life.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's kind of one thing as you go through exploring the stream of decision making, that to decide that where I eventually end up has to be something that isn't in fact default, isn't a chosen place and job or whatever it is in order to not be somewhere else. It is actually a positive decision made for my life, not for my entire life, but for my vitality, for my sense of being. And that's where in the dream you then think, well, you've got your sleeping bag, your tent, your clothes. I'm carrying too much, you say. And then you go back to the abandoned old white car van. So there's a sense there of, okay, in my life now, I'm maybe carrying too much baggage, or I maybe want to take too much of my old life forward with me, and I've got to let something go. But the only way I can really let this go is to revisit the abandonment back in that old ex relationship, whether it was an abandonment around the relationship or an abandonment around your work or an abandonment around the way that you lived, something like that. The only way that I can let go now is to go back, revisit that, and just awaken to something that went on then.
Yes, I can see so clearly.
Good, that's great. So, so you see that clearly now, and probably more so in the dream, Mouse, because you did awaken that sleeping part, that sleeping guy who you previously discussed when you answered the question about a guy, you said he was vagrant, no home. So there's a part of yourself that you'd abandoned, or that was vagrant, had no home, that you've woken up and stepped into, yes, I'm going to have a home, I'm going to go forward with this in some way. So we know that the awakening did actually happen in the dream, but the awakening, as it shows at the end, is currently at risk of frightening off the female side of yourself because she's off sobbing inside the car at the moment.
Yes.
So we definitely
certainly sobbing somewhere.
Yeah. So we want to find out what her grief is and bring her back on board and work out how you can amalgamate or integrate these two. So we've got a few little clues that we're going to go through quite quickly between now and then. So you do have the sirens. So I take that as a part of the awakening too. It's like, oh, what's she doing? Awaken to something as a part of yourself going, no, this can't be right. I'm, you know, danger. I've got to stop myself. What's going to happen to my life if I make this change, if I awaken to this? Everything's going to be out of order. Get the authorities, quick, bring her back in line. That's the sirens, really. But luckily you keep going. You turn one way, you turn the other. Both are steep, both are rocky. And both you do a turnaround and come back to the main path. So there's a sense there that even though, you know, you said at the beginning of the dream, the cul-de-sac you associate with an urban environment, so we all immediately assume that you prefer to be in a more natural environment, not an urban environment. And both of these places at the bottom of these steep, well, one, the first one was wilder and large round rocks and tall trees, so that would seem to be good. The other one may have been good, but it did have a railroad track on it. So in the dream, neither of these were actually suitable. They were too steep. And the what I picked up from the symbolism of the dream and the way you described it, Mouse, here, was that these were rocky and perhaps rock bottom. You know, you had to go steep, you had to go down low, and they were both rocky bottoms. And you weren't interested in that. You know, I don't actually want to go down. I've been rock bottom before. I don't want to go down rock bottom. That's not for me at this moment. And so I love your laughing. It's like, I know what this is about. So there's a sense there of even questioning is living in this, the wilder area, actually, although I want it, it's something that may be associated with rock bottom, maybe it's something I don't want. And this is where we have to entice the female side of yourself that's currently sobbing to come back on board. How can we get this right? How can we live without being rock bottom, but still in not only with nature in your your external environment, but with nature within yourself?
Yeah. So quite extraordinary. I can see, it's all piecing together quite clearly.
Yeah. So it's like you came to that fork in the road, and neither this way nor that way was really right. So it's like, do I stay where I am? Do I go ahead to this new thing? You see an urban street at that point, so it's almost a little bit like, how do I balance urban and nature, whether that's actual living in external environment or within myself? And if it's within yourself, you could say urban is male, is yang, and nature, you could say, is yin, is female. How do I get this balance? And that's where you drove to a place that's where you drove to a place that you felt was safe, at least safe enough to sleep, and described it as an industrial neighborhood, but on the edge of nature. So this is getting pretty good, you know, like it's part urban, part nature. You've got both. And the on the edge takes me back a little bit to your description of the gypsy guy. You said who you associate with being on the edge. So it's how do you do on the edge? One person might picture on the edge as a knife edge, a dagger edge, maybe. Another person might picture on the edge as, beautifully balanced. If we bring in the circus metaphor, I'm on the trapeze, you know, I'm equally balanced on the left, I'm equally balanced on the right, and that's why I can walk this tightrope. I can even dance this tightrope. I'm in perfect balance here. On the edge can be a good place or can be a frightening place, depending on how you approach it. Which brings us right to the end of the dream, which is some part of you is, yes, I've got this new way of being yang in the world. I've got this new plan. I am confident, and yet I'm caring, I'm gentle, I'm loving towards every part of my female. I really want to bring her creative, spiritual inner world on board with this, but she's not up for it just yet. So how do you relate to all of this?
I love the way that dreams have so many overlapping meanings. And I can see how it's relating to my external environment. I can see absolutely how it's relating to my internal environment. I can see how it's relating to my home and how I'm dealing with being alone and lonesome and looking at my inner self, my inner younger female self, who is very feeling very abandoned and lost and lonely and spending quite a lot of time sobbing. And so I am absolutely without a doubt trying to cultivate a more nurturing relationship with myself in that way. While simultaneously, moving my home and seeking a place that does have a balance of nature and urban, that does have a balance of community and a balance of I still have my own space where I can go and internally process, but have access to external process and community and all these things. So resonating quite profoundly.
Yes. Dreams beautifully reflect where we're at and sometimes add the unconscious side of where we're at, what we're less aware of or what has been sleeping, and then can enable us to stand back and sort of see the picture and go, okay, well, I've stepped away from my actual life and seen it in symbolic or metaphoric terms. Does this change the way that I feel about it or how I would like to move from here? But I just want to draw attention that you said there about the female side of yourself that's effectively sobbing and feeling lonely and lonesome. And you said without a drought, and then you corrected yourself and said without a doubt. And often when we're speaking about dreams, our unconscious mind does do the erstwhile Freudian slip just to add a bit of, so, you know, a drought could be feeling dry, you know, a lack of water, a lack of emotion. So without a drought is almost like, well, it's without a drought is with a drought. It's without a drought is with, no, I can't work that out at the moment at speed. But you mentioned droughts. So there's a sense of, yes, there is a drought in my life and I'm crying about that. But by the same token, crying is water, is redressing the drought, is addressing the drought. So the crying and the grief is part of that, acknowledging that, letting that go as part of that. So I guess, you know, part of your question might be, if you were the guy, if you embodied the guy at the end of the dream, and you're actually back in the dream, just thinking of the dream scenario, not your life, how would you further approach the girl to have a more romantic, integrated relationship with her? What would you do?
Well, I think that I would stop trying to pursue a sexually intimate relationship and really just ask her what her needs are in the moment to feel safe and feel connected, but not, what she would need to feel safe in intimacy.
Mm. So if you think of that in waking life, you have already answered it a little bit before, but what would the, not you, but what would the, your inner female, the creative, emotional, spiritual, inner world aspect of yourself need to feel safe and connected?
That is a good question. That is a good question. And I think really maybe what it boils down to is letting go of the sense of shame around crying and around emotionality, letting go of the sense of shame and really embracing myself in those moments and allowing myself fully to cry without piling on the top of it all of these other attributes that increase resistance, that are forceful, that are trying to change it into something that it's not, et cetera. It's just like the full permission to be seen and witness myself in grief.
Yes, absolutely. So beautifully expressed, Mouse, to end the drought.
Yeah.
Yeah. So beautifully done. And I won't ask you now because we're sort of running out of time, but we do have a few more minutes. But without going into any detail, does that sense of shame also relate back to that old relationship that you associate with the white van?
Yes, there is quite a lot of shame in that relationship for me, that came out of that relationship for me.
Yeah. So the dream is really urging you to not so much take those forks in the path that go down those steep hills to rock bottom, not necessarily to go down there, to go that far at all, but to just awaken to the bigger effect that shame had on you at that time in the past, so that you can actually recognize those emotions more deeply, cry them out. You know, sometimes I think we think that to explore something like that really does mean going down one of those steep paths and never ever going to be able to come back for at least 100 million years, because it's going to take time to process all that stuff. Whereas in fact, the more we run from something or hide from something or dodge that shame, which may be part of the earlier symbolism in the dream as well, the more we think it's something really, really big. And it is big in the sense that it has a profound impact on us, but it's maybe not so big in terms of what it takes to go back, acknowledge it, cry it out. So there may be some sense of the shame that was in that old relationship. There may be some sense that you've had of, yeah, I know there's shame there, but it's going to be too big to revisit. It's going to be like going down those steep inclines in the dream. It's like just going down to rock bottom. I'm going to be down there for 100 million years addressing the shame. I haven't got time to do that. It's better just to sort of dodge and run and try to find somewhere to hide from it. And that maybe explains some of the symbolism of the dream at that level too. Like maybe you're actually trying to consciously or unconsciously run from exploring or facing what you think is the intensity and depth of that shame. But usually with these things, the more that we do actually run from them or hide, the bigger they feel in our imagining than they actually were. Yes, the shame would have been huge for you and you would have felt it, but it's possible that when you actually go back and more openly look at it, awaken to that shame and really explore it, that although it was painful, it's not as huge as it has become in your mind. It's not such a huge issue to address, that in fact, with just really exploring what it was and having a really good cry is often all it needs to move on, to be able to say, yes, there was shame in that relationship, but the drought is over. I can take it forward as part of my life, but I'm not, I have no shame about it now. I can move on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also coupled with that idea of abandonment and sense of abandonment, not only shame, you know, of the relationship and of myself and the abandonment that I felt in relation to my partner, but also the abandonment that I felt to myself in continuing with that relationship.
Yeah, so that can also come back to that sense of staying in one spot and dodging all the daggers can also be a sense of abandoning myself as well. I became very skillful in that relationship, but I didn't save myself in that sense. I didn't run. I stayed in. I had things thrown at me. Might be something to explore. And also a sense of have a little look after we finish speaking about where you may or may not have abandoned your own hopes and plans and wishes around where you would like to be, your direction in life, where you would like to live, how you would like to work, and all of those things, where you may have abandoned yourself.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but as you say, you know, you really got it right. You said, I what I really want to do is to be seen in grief. I added to end the drought, to let go of shame, as you said, so that you can really move forward from here. So to aid that, awareness is part of it all, but to aid that, I'd like to give you a dream alchemy practice to do to really bring it home. And for people listening in that haven't listened to the dream show before, what a dream alchemy practice is where you take a symbol or a bit of drama or something from the dream and you change it. Using either visualization or writing or bodywork, all kinds of ways, but you essentially change the symbolism or change the drama of the dream, and it's a way of speaking to your unconscious mind to change limiting beliefs or open up to emotions or whatever it is, so that the outcome that you are ready for in waking life, so there are no barriers for it. So what I imagine for you, Mouse, would be something along the lines of having a... Do you enjoy playing with words and writing?
I sure do.
Oh, good. That's great. Because I'd like you to write a little short story that's no more than a page long, unless you really want to make it longer. And it's only for you, so it doesn't have to be an edited masterpiece. But a little page, and it's about the end of the dream, but it's changed. It's about how the male approaches the female and how she is seen in her grief. And you just let it go as it goes. But the idea at the end of the story is that the story ends happily because she's had a really, really good cry and she's been seen in her grief. And as a result of that, she's feeling clear. You might even have rainbows or something. And the two of them wander off, as you say, maybe not intimately involved, but definitely able to do something together. I don't want to be more precise than that, but what you're doing is changing that part of the dream so that then you're telling your unconscious mind that you're ready to follow through in life in whichever way you choose to do that, that you're ready to face that grief and cry it out and then move forward from there. How does that seem? How does that sound?
That sounds great. Yeah.
Okay, so do that. Don't leave too much time. Maybe before bed tonight or otherwise first thing in the morning, so that it can then, that can unconsciously work away in combination with your now more conscious awareness of what the dream is about. And the two together should change that beginning of the dream of I'm in dusk and in a cul-de-sac and confused and feeling attacked to quite the opposite. I'm feeling light. I'm on an open road. I know where I'm going and I'm not feeling attacked. I'm feeling, what's the opposite to being attacked? Embraced, maybe.
Okay. Totally. I'm going to go there tonight. Great.
Okay. I look forward to you contacting me later and letting me know how life turns out for you and where you end up. Thank you for being a wonderful guest on the Dream Show, Mouse.
Oh, you're so welcome, Jane. Thank you for Yeah, thank you so much for allowing me to be having the Dream Show, which is such an enjoyable and informative component in my life these days. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. That's so lovely. Oh, I do enjoy exploring dreams, whether it's on the Dream Show or whether it's with clients on a day-to-day basis. I'm so pleased that my dreams kind of led me in this direction to some 28 years ago decide, you know what, I'm just going to study dreams and I'm going to find myself a way of working with dreams in life because it's my passion. I'm so glad that I did that. I'm eternally grateful that I did. It's still always challenging. I love the idea of just sitting back and thinking, I'm just going to listen to a dream, which I know I've never heard before, because, hey, every dream is totally different and unique and individual. And all you can really do is bring all your tools and all your skills and all your techniques to that dream and go from there. And if you want to have some of those tools and techniques and skills yourself, of course, do go to the Dream Academy, dream-academy-online.com, and enroll for one of the courses, beginning with the first one, How to Interpret Your Dreams Step by Step, which takes you through a process that you can apply for every dream that you've had. Just start at the beginning, work through a chart. There's videos, there's lots and lots of stuff there, and you emerge at the other end with some really good, strong skills to be able to understand your own dreams. That's it. My other website, janetheresa.com, Teresa without an H, or find me on Instagram or Facebook. I know I'll be speaking with some of you between now and the next episode. And the next episode is episode 242, which goes out on the 22nd of April, 2021. That's in Australia. So if you live in other places of the world, it will probably be due out on the 21st of April, 2021. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.